everyone. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast on a beautiful blue-skied late autumnal afternoon in Norwich where we're all feeling nice and comfy. I'm Michael Bailey. I'm joined by David Freezer and Paddy Davitt to reflect on some Norwich City action, of course. We've just come back from, I think we're all feeling quite tired today, so you might have to bear with us. Dave's got his Mars milk out. Pad, how many coffees have you had today?
None, but I didn't rise before midday.
Oh, what, Dave, how does that make you feel?
I got woken up by builders hammering at 8 o'clock, sorry. So not at my house.
I was in our editorial system at 4 a.m. this morning, so... Yeah, it's a bit of a top and tail sort of 24 hours.
It's a glamorous life we lead, but we're not complaining about it, definitely not. What we might complain about is the football, however, because Norwich City succumbed to a 1-0 defeat at Nottingham Forest on Tuesday night, of course. This off the back of a 1-1 draw at home to Barnsley on the Saturday before. So, fair to say, gentlemen, things aren't going very well, and for all the patience and open-mindedness about what Norwich City are trying to do, it would be remiss to ignore that through a lot of supporters, certainly on social media, we're hearing it as well at games to a degree. There's a bit of frustration and a slight annoyance about the fact that they're not picking up results, and maybe the play and what's happening on the pitch isn't really enthralling them.
Well, you've basically hit the nail on the head. It is the results. The results are the filter for everything. Now, they wasn't playing particularly well during that 10-game unbeaten stretch, was it? But they were winning games, or they weren't getting beat. And fans will forgive a lot of things if there's something tangible at the end of it, because as much as you can trumpet work in progress, it's not work in progress if you're 5 games without a win, and unable to score goals in any decent quantities, consistently leaking a goal through avoidable errors. For me, that's in a nutshell where we're at the minute. If they were picking up one or two results in this 5-game spell, then much like the 10 games that preceded it, they will be forgiven for a lot. But it's no good saying it's a work in progress and we played well, as the manager said at Forest, if it's more of the same. So for me, it's very simple. You get a few results from somewhere quick or this will escalate.
And it's interesting, isn't it, because as you kind of said, Pad, the actual performance level possibly isn't too dissimilar to when they were picking up those wins and everything was looking rosy and no one could score against them and the moment of quality would unlock the team they were playing.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair point. They things just seemed to drop for them. Things kept seeming to go in their way. I remember when we were at Middlesbrough and Reading and Sheffield United, it never really felt like the home side was going to equalise. It just felt like Norwich were had dug in and already pulled it off to a certain extent, despite I remember all those teams, Middlesbrough in particular, certainly had chances late on, but it never really felt nervous, whereas that confidence has seeped away. And yeah, of course there have been injury problems and fitness issues and stuff like that, but they are easing to a certain extent, and we're still seeing the sort of lack of depth in the squad. James Husband is gone. Marcus Stieperman has to play at left back. He doesn't really seem like someone that wants to be playing at left back at the moment, just for one example. And I don't think he played particularly well either last night. So just doesn't feel like things are going Norwich's way. And a 5-game run without a win is difficult for fans to stomach. But when you put that on top of a 6-game run at home without a win, I think that's still the source of a lot of frustration for obviously 22,000 season ticket holders.
It's funny how things flip, isn't it? Because I think at Reading, Norwich seeing out that game, and a bit at Middlesbrough possibly, you sort of thought, okay, yeah, this team can see this out. I feel confident enough in what they're doing that I'm not too worried. Conversely, I thought Tuesday night at Forest felt quite predictable in that, Norwich were playing nice in the build-up, but you just never thought they were going to score. You kind of always feared that at some point Forest would create a chance that they'd probably be able to take, and that would be that. I don't know, did you feel like that, Pad?
Yeah, I mean, you have to, because it's filtered through this ongoing downward trend. It's regressive at the minute, and I think, going back to what Dave was talking about there, that block of decent results mined in adversity, I got the sense, you would have thought that got the sense that if this is a progressive thing, then they're winning games by not playing well, right, the next stage is they're still going to be defensively resolute and they're going to win games a bit more of a canter. They're going to entertain punters, and it's gone the other way. You know, the performances remain patchy, and now they're not as resolute, so they're not picking up the results as well. So there's a lot of pieces of the jigsaw missing for me, and you know, I keep reiterating, if it doesn't change quickly, then this will escalate. And what do I mean by escalate? I don't mean changing head coaches or anything as drastic as that. We're a long way from that, because this clearly is something that is now got a bed in for probably this season and next season. But you know, if you want to carry people with you and those 22,000 fans, and you need to give them something, and they're not giving them enough at the minute.
And I'm sure we'll get stuck into that, because we've got a big week coming up at the football club with, of course, Saturday's game and the AGM coming up too. But first of all, let's just hear a little bit from Ivo Pinto and Daniel Farke following last night's defeat at Forest.
Yes, 1%. So after the last game, I had to criticise my lads. I think it was our worst home game for me today. It was our best away game, although we had a series of wins. But I think, especially in the first half, we were brilliant. We controlled the whole game. We calmed the stadium down like no other team here at Nottingham. And I think the only thing that was missing was a goal in the first half. And in the second half, sadly, we had to substitute in the halftime Tim Klose. And the second half, I think we were the better team too, and we were closer to the goal. And out of a situation which was never, not even a chance, simply crossing situation out of the half field. We didn't react quick enough, and concede the goal after, I don't know, 79 minutes or whatever. And tried everything and created some more chances, some set piece, some situation in the box where the penalty whistle was left. It's like it is. So today, I just compliments for the performance of my lads. It's really hard to accept this loss, yes.
At this point, it's all new this season. How important is sticking with it? How important is the belief in what Daniel's trying to do rather than changing it, even though the results have dried up?
Yeah. When we look back to the after Millwall game, things were going brilliant, even not scoring lots of goals. We were playing good, we were having the control of the games, and we had a brilliant run. When the moment is not the best, of course we can always speak about everything, but we just need to stick together and stick to with Daniel's ideas, because we already proved that with his ideas we can play good, we can win games, and we can keep a clean sheets that last season was so hard to get. So I just think we need to stick to it.
And of course, I think the thing we should probably reflect on, which is the thing that a lot of people have talked about, is Daniel Farke's assertion that last night was one of the best away, I think direct quote, the best away performance of the season so far.
Yeah, I don't think that was the wisest thing to say. He had a point to a degree in that they didn't play too badly overall. I mean, certainly second half, they looked like they were coming into it. They were looking like, I tweeted that perhaps it was time to get Josh Murphy in, somebody that can maybe create something just so they could get ahead and then desperately try and hang on. And that never really happened. You know, that lack of threat in the final third was really obvious again. I mean, Nelson Oliveira hit some stupid shots. There was one which in the first half he hit, which was blocked anyway, but I think it was probably going to go out in the corner of the stadium somewhere. It was ridiculous. And talking to one of the local journos up there who I know a bit from university afterwards, he said, well, that was the Oliveira that they saw more often than not. Whereas at the start of this season, Norwich were seeing the real deal with Oliveira, weren't they? They were seeing him on top form, fit, back in the Portugal squad, happy. And then obviously his injuries have disrupted him. So I guess it makes sense to persist with him, hoping that he rediscovers that sort of magic touch, and then he can make the difference in these tight games, because it was a tight game. They weren't overrun. To be honest, I was a bit disappointed with Forest. I thought they stood off Norwich. It was Norwich who were the team doing more pressing. It was, you know, sort of a good quality game without many players really taking their chances. You know, the final ball for both teams wasn't particularly great until Carriol came on for Forest and put in the cross, and which Darren Murphy made the most of. So it's just a frustrating time at the moment, and for Daniel to sort of say something which is a bit inflammatory like that after the game was probably not that wise, because fans are already at the point of wanting to have a bit of a pop anyway. So, I'd imagine he maybe afterwards just thought, I probably could have just kept that to myself.
I mean, yeah, like Dave says, you kind of know where he's coming from, because I think he, having criticised his players quite heavily on Saturday, he obviously wanted to big up the fact that the performance was a reaction of sorts, which it was. It's just the problem is that however well-intentioned these quotes sometimes get, you kind of know they're going to linger around a bit, I guess, and we as journalists know when something's said and you think that might dangle around for a little bit. And I guess is part of this about expectations as well, Pat, because we're in a situation where Norwich fans are still hoping there will be some sort of promotion challenge this season, and what we're actually going through at the moment, I think, is a realisation that is ebbing further and further away. I mean, some people will be convinced this season was only ever about mediocrity and mid-table anyway, but not everyone was. And, you know, with the last set of parachute payments and all that goes with it, as we've been talking about, some people would have hoped that this would have been a proper time to challenge, and actually Norwich fans are maybe going to have to adjust to the reality of what this season means.
True to a degree, but if we had Stuart Webber and Daniel Farker around this table at the minute, they wouldn't think 15th is an acceptable benchmark at the minute. So you judge them by the league status, and they're failing. How high they can go, I can only personally speak from what I felt before a ball was kicked, and that if they got anywhere near 8th again, that would be a very good season. And then if you get some wind in your sails and there's enough games left in the season, you can raise the bar higher. But so if I thought they could hover around 8th to 10th, then they're below that, and they're not showing any signs that they're going to get anywhere near it. Going back to the quotes from Farker, I think there's two audiences he's trying to appease here. There's his fan base and there's his players, and having been quite critical of them after Barnsley, that was almost a soothing sort of a message to his players, I thought. But clearly, as the fan base would interpret it, it's, are you watching the same game as us, which was pretty much what the reaction was on social media. So it's a delicate balance he has to tread. But the reality is, if they don't get a result or two very quickly, then you can forget even the most eternal optimist can forget about getting anywhere near the top six. And my worry would be it's looking over shoulders, because the bottom six would start to loom into view, and with a massive turnover of players and a lot of lads who don't know what English football is about per se, and particularly a relegation battle in English football, then we wouldn't want to spend the second part of the season the gap between Norwich and the bottom three.
Yes, quite, and these things can get creep up on you pretty quickly, which kind of leads us onto Saturday, doesn't it? Just how important is this game? And it is, you know, we love a subplot, we love when these little narratives come up, but I mean, in terms of timing, for this being Alec Neil's first return to Carrow Road with the Preston side, who are probably quite adept at tucking in and also breaking quite quickly on the counter, I mean it just has awkward stamped all over it for me. And we have these situations turn up sometimes, don't they, where this game will carry more weight because of those subplots, and if it goes wrong, it will be a little bit different to if it goes wrong against Barnsley.
Yeah, I was just quickly flicking through. They won last night, was it at Bristol City?
They won 2-1. I think I saw, Callum O'Dowda apologising for Bristol City's performance, so they obviously felt they didn't play particularly well last night, but they were 2-0 up, and I think Bristol City scored late on, and that off the back of a pretty ropey result I think Preston had at the weekend, so a bit of a reaction there.
So that's clearly a good result, and after quite a bad spell for them where they've been very short of defenders, which, you know, Alex is going to be bang up for this game. And for my worry would be that for Daniel and a lot of the players, it's not going to mean a great deal that they're facing Alex Neil. They may not appreciate that he is going to have his team very much up for that game. And yeah, if they come here and win, then it's going to be galling mainly for supporters, really, because everybody, I'd say largely the support, all wanted Alex gone last season, earlier than he went, and things had really gone off the boil. So it's going to be really galling if he does come here and win. I sort of agree with Pad in that it's too early to be looking at Farker, and I've seen, you know, on Twitter, you have to take it with a pinch of salt, and there are people out there who are saying stupid things like, oh, go and get Tony Pulis. I mean, there is as much chance of me starting up front against Preston on Saturday as there is of Stuart Webber appointing Tony Pulis.
Take your boots.
I could certainly manage some of the shots that Nelson's trying at the moment, at least. So I don't see the attention focusing towards Daniel or even Stuart too much. I think the attention this time will go straight to the board, because this has been another Premier League chance missed, and it's now, there's no obvious plan for getting extra finances into the club. It's just telling everyone that the finances are going down and down, and there's a lot of people who are focusing on that ahead of Daniel, and I think that's the way the trend will continue if Daniel can't turn things around on the pitch and sort of bail the board out, as it were.
We do know that Ivo Pinto is looking for, you know, it will mean a lot to him to face Alec Neil, because he said he's willing to tackle him, which, given he's the manager in the opposition dugout, might not be the wise.
Well, they will be in close proximity, given Neil used to prowl the front end of his technical area, and Ivo will be bombing down that flank. I'll look forward to that challenge.
He's preempted it now. I mean, if you speak to some of the board members, I imagine they would say game before the AGM, which is on Wednesday night, kind of do with a positive result there regardless.
It's a win bonus.
Yeah, it's a big one. And again, that just filters into the context, as we've been saying, about Alec Neil, Preston, and the game before the AGM, where, you know, fans do get that chance directly to speak to the board members and make a point if they so wish.
I would imagine the AGM, irrespective of Saturday's result now, will be reiterating that what a massively ambitious project we've embarked on. First foreign coach, sporting director structure, massive turnover players, look at the work we're doing in the academy, but this takes time. That is clearly, before any ball or any action this Saturday, will be the message. But it wouldn't half help if they went into that off the back of hopefully beating Alex Neil's team, because that would reinforce that, yes, okay, there's going to be some cul-de-sacs, they're going to go down this road, but ultimately they are heading in the right direction and there's better skies ahead, because at the minute it doesn't feel like that.
So what has to happen on Saturday then in terms of the challenge they're facing? We don't know if anyone's missing will be back. I mean, Tom Tribal was out with an injury and he was going to be missing for a week, wasn't he? So James Maddison was suspended but also picked up a knock. And of course at Forest we also had Tim Klosigoff with a hip complaint, which could quite possibly rule him out of Saturday.
Yeah, no. And my concern would be a midfield two of, as it was at Forest, Vrančić and Reed, given time to play, because Forest are a possession-based team themselves and not pressed. You can forget that against Alex Neil's operation. They will be firmly in their faces. And if, as you rightly say, the options are so sparse that it'll be those two again, I think they'll get overrun. And if, as to quote Farker after Barnsley, if you lose the middle ground at this level, then you more often than not are going to lose games. And that would be my concern, that the key area of the pitch on Saturday, they're going to be weak, lightweight, and get overrun. And the outcome will be inevitable then. So I'm not sure how much he can change it, really. Pritchard will probably play Sunday in the latest development game, but he can't return quick enough, along with Mr. Tete.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because Alex Pritchard played for the under-23s, didn't he, on Monday? I mean, Nelson Oliveira was he was this major miss, and now he's back in the side and he hasn't scored yet. And
well, I mean, what I would say with him is, even though he does like to take most of the opposition on by himself, he's not got until maybe last night with Marley Watkins up alongside him and Jerome before that. The midfield, we've had this debate now over the last sort of period, that the supply lines are fitful, they're sporadic, and if you're a front player on your own up top, you need A, bodies around you, and B, a decent supply line. Look at Murphy's goal last night. Carriol comes on, beats a man, bursts into the box, cuts it back, width of the 6-yard box, thank you very much. How much service has Oliveira had of that nature? He's basically, it just feels like he gets the ball, edge of the box, back to goal, loads of bodies in front of him, I've got to try something here, spectacular. As much as you can focus on Oliveira or Jerome, the midfield aren't functioning in terms of a supply line, and until they get that element sorted out, they continually going to be debating here, why can't they score more goals?
Yeah. James Husband, I think, is also out for Saturday, isn't he? He's looking at a couple of weeks, despite he was banned for last night anyway, because he'd had five yellows. But I think Daniel said at the presser on Monday that it was potentially a couple of weeks, wasn't it? Yeah, so Steepman has to continue at left back, so that then limits slightly your options. I thought Marley Watkins had one of his best games since, and he played on the left, which isn't something we've been quite used to. Vrančić definitely played better than he did on Saturday and did show a bit more willing to stand up to tackles and put his foot in, and I thought that was one of his better performances, but still, you know, far from brilliant. And Harrison Reed, I thought he showed a lot more tenacity than he has at times, and generally did okay. But as Pad said, if Preston come and get in their faces, it's a totally different game. So it comes down to, once again, that they've got to start scoring goals. They've got to start being more ruthless. And one thing you get with Watkins is that he is at least buzzing around the back line, trying to get in behind him. Was it played in a couple of times, wasn't he? First half, his touch let him down when I think it was Wes had played a nice ball over the top, and if he'd have controlled that first time, then he should have been scoring. So at least he offered another option up there with Oliveira to sort of free up Nelson to, you know, run around and run into other spaces. But if you've got Maddison and Houlihan on the pitch, they are both players who want to be on the edge of the box. They're not ones who are going to be bursting forward, you know, to get to the byline, get into the box. So how you sort of fix all that, I don't really know, but I think I'd probably be looking at Watkins and Murphy wide with one of Maddison or Houlihan. Possibly Wes on Saturday, because I thought Maddison is looking a little bit leggy despite what he insisted on Monday. Murphy didn't get much of a chance to do much, but when they both came on at Bolton, they both looked bright as well. So I think if you're going to get some incision in that final third and free up a bit more space for Nelson, that's probably the three I would look at playing behind him.
Yeah, the lack of midfielders going beyond the striker and just getting clogged up on the edge of the box. They look a mess going forward at the moment, to be brutally honest, because we know they're really struggling to score goals, but they don't really look like they're figuring out a way of improving it at the moment. But, I mean, I was going to end with the podcast with some positives, and Dave, I think you just about verged on some positives there. I'm going to take a few of those at the moment. Pad, have you got a positive in there somewhere? I mean, I'm struggling, I'll be honest, because I'm not even sure that Carrow Road is really up for let's all get behind them at the moment, given what's been going on recently. And we've obviously got an ongoing debate. If you go on to pinken.com at the moment, we've got a survey about how best to improve the atmosphere. I know it's being talked about all over the shop, and it's a really difficult debate.
There's one way, and we'll end this by coming full circle. There's one way you improve the atmosphere. You give players some entertaining, you give punters some entertaining football. You score goals, you create chances. It's not this, we'll pass laterally all day long. Oppositions will line up with two banks of four. We'll break them down because Norwich will disappear into ever decreasing circles of intricacy, and then we'll counter attack with pace. We'll get the wrong side of central midfielders who can't defend or don't naturally have that defensive instinct. Just give them something to cling on to, and you'll be amazed how the atmosphere will improve. It's a very simple end game.
That is the ideal point to end this podcast. Pat, Dave?
Well, it's an easy thing to say, but because we can't keep harking back to Grant Holt years, but wouldn't you just give something for somebody to slam into a tackle and put an opposition on the back foot? Because there's no one doing that. I mean, what you often get when things are going wrong at clubs is people saying, you know, that a head coach has lost a team or whatever, or when things are going well, players run through brick walls for their manager or their coach, don't they? Can you say that any Norwich player is running through a brick wall for Daniel Farker at the moment? I think they owe him a bit more than what they're giving, to just really go for the jugular against it and try and get the crowd on side to create that atmosphere and make Carrow Road what it should be and what it has often been. Even in the Premier League, the atmosphere stayed strong because you can accept the odd drubbing from a Manchester City or whatever because they've got so much money, but they were still competitive in their home games, and at the moment, there doesn't feel like they're prepared to really front up to teams enough.
I've got the lovely analogy of Norwich players sort of sluggishly skulking over to a wall and trying to push it over. That's how it kind of feels to me at the moment, as opposed to trying to run through it.
Like a tired army cadet in training.
I'm just wondering, Grant Hanley up top, you know, he'd just slide in, bully a few.
Well, he's a Grant H, so that's a good start. Yeah, I mean, I think he was fine again last night. On the whole, he dealt with Daryl Murphy, a player he knows well because they were at Newcastle together last season, and was pretty tight on him all game. Unfortunately, Zimmerman lost him for the goal, and fair play to Murphy. He was alert. There'd been a similar chance just before, hadn't there, which ended with Ivo Pinto incredibly coolly just turning out of trouble. Thankfully, he had a bit of space, and Murphy hadn't gambled that time when the ball had been put into the box, but he learnt straight away and he got to the near post the next time, and Stiepermann didn't close down Carriol at all. He just sort of watched two players running towards him and had a bit of a mind freeze. So yeah, all round, even if it was a better performance than it was against Barnes on Saturday, they've got to find another gear to beat Preston on Saturday.
If only that goal wasn't exactly the same as the one Bolton scored, and with the first goal being so important. Right, should we wrap it up? I'm getting nods. Yeah, we're all ready to go to bed, aren't we? So let's do that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Dave, Pad, thank you very, very much for joining us. Don't forget pinken.com for all the analysis from last night's game and ongoing. And, of course, we'll have the build-up to Saturday's visit from Alec Neil's Preston, as we have to refer to them. And you definitely can't call them Preston North End, or, I don't know, some Preston fans having a go at me for it anyway. But, yeah, that will be the game on Saturday. Follow that live at pinken.com. And hopefully we'll be back on the other side to bring you all our thoughts on the website and here on the podcast. Until then, goodbye.